Hello, welcome to the MJA podcast. I'm Kate Swanell, and I'm the news and online editor for The Journal and your erstwhile host. Today, it's my pleasure to introduce you to adjunct Professor Kylie Ward, who is the CEO of the Australian College of Nursing after many years of nursing in aged care and intensive care settings. Doctors and nurses have far more in common than they have differences. Rather than have another Disease of the Week podcast, we thought we'd have a chat about just what we can learn from each other. Kylie is my special guest on the pod today. You were a clinician, I think, in aged care, yes?
Yeah, and intensive care.
Right.
And my clinical background, yeah.
So how did you get into the administrative side of things, and the leadership side of things?
Sometimes opportunities like that find you. And so I had an opportunity to, when I went over to aged care, to act as a nurse unit manager. It started off 3 weeks and, you know, the rest is history.
And here you are.
Yeah, then you keep going from one thing to another.
Yeah, isn't that the way of life sometimes?
20 years passes and here I am.
Do you still do some, well, no, you don't, obviously. You don't still do some clinical work, do you?
I haven't in the last couple of years. I always did do agency work on top of my executive roles.
And wow.
So probably only a few years ago I stopped working in aged care as an agency nurse. And it was, I'm just too busy.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was great. I put my ponytail on, my agency uniform, and it's interesting how you get treated, which is not right. But, you know, there's a bit of anonymity. So I went into one aged care facility, and one of the staff, the lifestyle coordinators, recognised me because I'd been the chief nurse at Monash Health. And she said, "You're the chief nurse at Monash, you're a professor." And I'm like, "Shh. You know, just want to deliver care today. I want to look at the policies and the structure."
That must have been an interesting experience, a bit like, you know, My Secret Boss and all of that stuff.
I love that show.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's great that that concept. And I think it's important to remain connected, particularly when I'm talking at national level and representing the profession. It's certainly important that I really understand how challenging it is for direct caregivers, and that's all direct caregivers, but particularly I think for nurses. They're tough, long days, absolutely.
The topic of fixed ratios of nursing in aged care, whether it was quantity or not so much the quality, but the way we allow nurses, registered nurses particularly, to do their jobs that they're trained for. What's your take and what's the college's take on the state of nursing and aged care right now and what needs to happen to make things better if things are not great?
We absolutely insist that there must be at least a registered nurse on every shift in aged care facilities, and that's not a token registered nurse sitting as the director of nursing in an office doing all of the admin. That's somebody governing care, overseeing care, and being available for the care staff. We don't, our colleagues at the union, at the Australian Nursing and Midwifery Federation, drive ratios. We don't. What we say is that can be considered a blunt tool. Can't actually guarantee that me as a nurse and I could be working with a really skilled aged care nurse if I'm a new graduate, if I'm unfamiliar, if I'm deployed into an area. Numbers alone are not enough.
No.
So what we say is that it really needs to be about skill mix and about the acuity of the residents and or patients, and that we need to be able to have some flexibility. And nursing and doctors and clinicians in and of itself would understand the numbers, but the trouble is that there's administrators who are looking to churn a profit and don't really understand that even if you had that minimum set, you may need more on different days and occasions because of cognitive impairment or dysfunction or complexities or deterioration. So we don't, we advocate that there should be a tool for a reasonable workload in some way, but that it's a tool and that's all, and that it still allows for decision making to override to support need.
Stephen Judd made the comment that the last thing he wanted was to see a registered nurse pushing a medication trolley.
Yeah, I love that because it shows how far we've come in respect for colleagues. And, you know, now carers, there's Webster Packs, we're looking at, there's so much challenge with polypharmacy, but really when we're looking at care and what nurses and clinicians offer to patients and their families. It's an holistic approach. So spending all of your time giving out the medications when an endorsed enrolled nurse can do that with the governance of a registered nurse. There's more in the complexity of the planning and the coordination of the care and requirements of each person as a whole individual, rather than just compartmentalising medication management. Yeah. So I love that. It does. It shows how that collegial respect we have.
Which brings us to the age-old doctors versus nurses debate. How has that changed?
You know, I love this because we are definitely, we're tribal, we all are.
Yes.
And we're just as bad as the next tribe. And it's really interesting because, you know, the 100 years ago, you know, the nurses being the handmaids to the doctors, we've come a long way from there.
Oh, yeah.
And even 100 years ago, nurses were fighting to do the task of taking blood pressure because that was a medical task. So sometimes we can get caught around the edges of a task. What we will see going into the, and we get a little bit territorial around who's qualified to do a task, but at the end of the day, any kind of technical task anyone can pretty much be taught to do. So for me, it's always, what is the philosophy of our professions and where are we coming from and how do we work together? And in the best interest of the community and the patients that we serve, the community get the best of us when we know our roles, when we know what nursing care is and what medical care is and what allied health or functional health is, and we all come together and bring our piece to that and work as integrated teams. So, yeah, it's funny. It's a little bit tribal. There's always, you know, we're always fighting for resources and
yeah.
Nurses are usually the biggest budgets and doctors get paid the most. Well, you know, it's all, we've done this for years. But at the end of the day, health wouldn't exist without either one of us. There is a level of maturity for the most part
yes.
where we all understand each other's role. And I think sometimes it will be the broader organisations like the AMA will put out a statement that offends nurses, but it's not every doctor or every GP. And so I think we understand that. And so sometimes it's getting caught around the task or the funding of tasks. But at the end of the day, if it was our relatives, who do we want looking after them? Really competent and professional doctors and nurses and allied health professionals.
Nurse practitioners, here is the blurring of the line in the sense, where are they fitting into the model of primary care, for example, and what are the barriers to making that situation run smoother?
Look, nurse practitioners are perfectly placed in primary care and aged care, and for the most part they've been supported in acute care. And, of course, our medical colleagues have been very strong advocates in supporting for nurse practitioners in the team. But I would like to see in the future that nurse practitioner is the highest level clinician from a nursing perspective.
Yes.
And whilst there might be similarities in roles that we can do, it's like going back to 100 years ago. A nurse and a doctor can take a blood pressure. Who really cares? It's
yeah.
what's in the best interest of the patient.
Yep.
So for the best needs of the community, we certainly have our GPs. Everybody knows how long we need to wait. Clinics are closed. I live in Canberra for my role.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get into a GP. All the books are closed. The nurse-led clinics, you have to be really sick. Or how long do you wait? And if you're well, like someone like me, how do you even know where to go to? The primary care model needs to be broader than, of course, GP clinics, and we all know that, and nurses are very important in those clinics. But nurse practitioner, to somebody to have an episode of care where instead of going to a doctor to get a referral or where care is compartmentalised or patients are inconvenienced, that's where we need to grow up as a nation. And what we will see going into the future is that it will be the same for podiatrists, pharmacists, all professionals. Prescribing will be something that will be interesting as we look in the next decade of what happens with prescribing. That was always territorially medicine, but that doesn't make a doctor either. A doctor is far more than their ability to prescribe, give you a script. And so for a podiatrist, let's say, does somebody need to go to the doctor to get their prophylactic antibiotics to then have, their ingrown toenail out or whatever it might be? It's not good use of the resources of our clinicians to waste time double dipping or having to sit in rooms. And so I think that the role of the nurse practitioner, particularly in the primary care, We know that 70% of deaths occur from non-communicable diseases. Nurses have a huge role in this area, and particularly with chronic disease prevention, promotion, looking at wellness and interventions and management. And so I would like to actually see more nurse practitioners and more nursing models in the community and primary arena.
I think it's going to happen.
Yeah, I think so. And particularly what we're seeing with the trends in medicine, I suspect will be the same, is that there's real shortages of nurses in rural and remote areas,
yep,
and critical care. So there's particular areas, if you can't get a doctor, if you can't get, you know, there's, we shouldn't live in a first world country. Australia is a very fortunate country, but the reality is that we don't have universal health care, in as much as we know that the outcomes are poorer for people who live in the country as opposed to the city. So it's around access, and for us as clinicians to get over our historical mindset to be able to meet the needs of the community. And I think there's no shortage of business. We're in a supply and demand world. We're okay. So
yes,
we don't need to disadvantage the population by getting too territorial. And we've done the same in the nursing profession. It was a huge mind shift for enrolled nurses to give medications, and, you know, even for the enrolled nurses themselves, for nursing to let that go. We all have our own stuff to deal with, but it's in the best interest of progressing to do that.
What's the university v hospital trained ratio of nurses these days?
Oh, I don't know that there's a number specifically, but it's getting the average age of a nurse has reduced. It used to be about 47, 48. It's now 44. Nurses that are 44 are university trained. So you will still see, like, I couldn't really give you a percentage, whether
that's
it's
right,
20 or 30%,
yep,
but what we do know is by 2025, 50% of the workforce will be millennials. By 2030, 75% of the workforce will be millennials. So the challenge moving forward is, because it's probably been about 28, 30 years that nursing's been in the university. So it really is about how do we prepare nurses for the future and the demands of nursing. It's really demanding as a clinician, for all clinicians. You know, I've been an after-hours nurse manager, and mm-hmm, Your junior doctors, your residents, your interns, like, everybody's working hard. So we all, yep, need to know how to look out for each other, look after each other. And certainly, as we want and need more nurses coming into the profession, how best to prepare them, because they hit the ground running. I was at a dinner last night and talking to a 50-year registered nurse, who was a really impressive young woman. And she was saying that she left a very well-regarded city hospital because she was a second year registered nurse in charge of shift in ICU, and she felt though she was like third year or fourth year, but she felt she was out of her league.
Wow. But
it was just so many young nurses that she was the senior, and so she was smart enough to know that on her professional license, so much can go wrong there.
Yeah.
But of course, you know, to be able to have an appropriate skill mix and enough new staff and senior staff, and is really quite a challenge, and will be going forward.
And presumably she's gone off to get herself some more experience.
Yeah, she's just starting her master's and she's going into aged care. And I thought, what an asset she'll be for aged care.
We touched on some things there. I mean, obviously in medicine, there's a huge issue right now with doctors' mental health.
Yes.
Young doctors, medical students are killing themselves.
Yes.
Is a similar thing going on in nursing?
Yeah, there's a huge concern around mental health, depression, mm-hmm, suicide attempts. There's also when I talked before about non-communicable diseases, unfortunately, we're not a healthy profession. There's issues with, you know, even as much as not only in the mental health area, but certainly in terms of diabetes, physical fitness and health, chronic disease. So we, as health professionals, don't always remember to look after each other. And so when you mentioned before about the old doctors, nurses kind of thing, it's interesting because it's a bit like siblings. Sure, we all know how to, you know, argue with each other.
Yep.
But at the end of the day, we come together. There's an alignment that, you know, nobody wants to hear that one of our colleagues was struggling and we didn't know it.
Yep.
And so we need to all get much better at looking out for each other. And the rosters and the workloads of the junior doctors, you know, what I've always said as a director of nursing and a nursing senior nurse manager for our nurse unit managers and our team leaders is look after the junior medical workforce because we have the infrastructure to do it and to support them. We get on well with the consultants. We know what the consultants want and need to help them when they refer. So it's really important that we don't just nurture our own, but we nurture all emerging clinicians.
Don't forget that the MJA isn't just the MJA. We have an online weekly news magazine called MJA Insight, which is completely open access and free to subscribe. You can find Insight at drportal.com.au/MJA Insight. That's all one word. Back to our chat with Kylie Ward, CEO of the Australian College of Nurses. Of course, one of the biggest issues for junior doctors is the way in which senior doctors train them, and often the senior doctors train the junior doctors in the way they were trained. And it appears to have created this culture of, for want of better words, bullying and harassment. Is that an issue in nursing as well?
Yeah, and I was talking to some medical colleagues of mine a few months ago now. We were out at dinner and what they actually made the comment to me, because sometimes it feels like nursing's always airing the dirty laundry because we're still 90% female-dominated. We talk about everything and publicly. And so there's a lot of talk about, you know, nurses eat their young and the bullying culture and you think, oh, there's so many nurses doing such a great job. But, yeah, there's some that it's not healthy. Just like the doctors had the tough love of how they were trained, there was from the matron mindset some pretty tough love in nursing and high expectations. And one of the things that the doctors that I was talking to said to me is, Kylie, at least you talk about it. Because, want to attract the best nurses. We don't want people to think they'll come in. It's out in the open. This year, for example, we have a quarterly publication, a hard copy circulation called The Hive. And what we've done this year is dedicated every quarter to something around workforce and building culture and capability and addressing some of the topics around, you know, bullying and inverted commas. So it's looking at, where's the resilience? There's twofold. There's the resilience of how can your boss have a constructive conversation with you without you getting hurt feelings or feeling like you're being bullied when you need to improve. But then there's the other side of it where it is that tough love, like, you know, this is what we went through. It's that earn your stripes. And that's where we need to make generational change. And that's why for any junior doctor that I know and meet, and I've got sons and their friends have gone into medicine and I watch them closely and, you know, I always say, get to know the nurses, get to know the other staff.
Yes.
The best thing that you can do is, you know, get the rest of the team around you because they will help you and support you and give you a bit of guidance.
The other big issue for junior doctors is the number of graduates coming out and the shrinking number of training places. Is that a problem too in nursing?
Yeah, it is. And it'll be the same for medicine. It's this crazy dichotomy that we hear that there's a shortage of nursing workforce, medical workforce. You can't get enough doctors, you can't get enough nurses, and then they can't get a job.
Yeah.
And what we don't have a shortage of is junior staff, and you can't fill a ward or a unit or a hospital with junior staff.
No, you can't.
And so the real challenge is not burning out the seniors. And for us, for nursing, because of the volume and the number of nurses, it's also clinical placements. So doctors do their internship year, which is great because they get so much clinical experience and then need to find security in employment. And sometimes I would say for junior doctors, like I would say for junior nurses in their career, sometimes the specialty you want is not the specialty you're going to end up in. You need to keep a little bit open-minded around where are the opportunities, and just see where life takes you. Rather than, you know, we all have dreams and aspirations. I mean, I never would have thought I would have ended up in aged care, but really, most of the patients in ICU were elderly, to be honest. And of course, I've had a wonderful career and loved what I did, but at university, you wouldn't have heard me say that. So I think that sometimes things find us, and it's about keeping open-minded and seeing where the training registrar programs are, where the opportunities are. And for medicine will, like nursing, we need to keep reinventing ourselves. And medicine's a completely specialised model, but where's the generalist component if you don't want to
be a specialist?
When I started nursing, because I've been nursing for about 27 years, there was still a generalist model. When I went to Liverpool Hospital as the director of the Division of Medicine, they still had general medicine just at the end stages of it. Yep. But it was... and other places were moving to purely specialty. But I remember thinking at the time, you know, I think we're losing something here. And it was the same as your generalist surgeons and your generalist physicians. And GPs, primary care still is required to be generalist, but now we're in such a specialist world that I think we need to return to that to be able to meet the needs of all Australians. We can't live in a specialist world. Mm. And so I know some hospitals have trialled the CMO, the hospitalist medical role, which I know nurses love because there's somebody as part of the staff team who's very senior that makes a difference. And so I hope that some more career choices will become available in medicine, and we have to reinvent ourselves in nursing as well.
The other big thing that's changed in the last 6 months is that we now have voluntary assisted dying laws in this country.
Yes.
What does that mean for, it's caused huge debate, obviously, in medicine. What's happening in nursing around palliative care and end-of-life care and voluntary assisted care?
It's a great question, Kate, because it's something that we had to consider from the Australian College of Nursing's perspective. What's our role here? Mm. And we have made a conscious decision that we don't get caught in the debate. We believe that people have a right to choose. We're not making a decision there, but the legislation has passed, and so we have a responsibility professionally to take a leadership role. So what we did earlier this year, we've launched 4 policy chapters, and one of them is end-of-life care. And the chair of that policy chapter is Professor Patsy Yates, and she's an internationally and nationally renowned nursing leader in this space. And so she's working with the chapter of nurses and consumers and people from the department and, you know, representatives from like Palliative Care Australia and other organisations to develop our position on that. And so we'll look at some practical implications for nurses on the introduction of assisted dying legislation. It's complicated, and the reality is it's not palliative care, it's assisted dying. Palliative care is a bigger space. This is a small percentage of the population will actually get to utilise this legislation, but it is big ticket in the media and in people's minds. What I'm hoping that it will do, and certainly from a nursing perspective where we have a really important role here, is to make sure that people are having discussions around end-of-life care. And so there's steps further up the chain. There's palliative care there, but really, you know, it's around, it should be okay to talk about your end-of-life care wishes and not when you're end-of-life. We should all be doing it now with our families, like we did years ago with organ donation, and make it part of the conversation.
That's a great model to base that on. I was talking to a lung transplant surgeon yesterday who was saying, oh, my God, you know, as soon as the awareness lifted, transplantation became a real option for people as a treatment.
Yes, because I worked in an intensive care unit that was a major tertiary hospital, so we harvested and did organ transplants. Mm. So intensive care had a role, and as a nurse back in those days of learning and getting the training and having the conversations with our medical colleagues and supporting families. But it, you know, again, at that point of care, even if it's somebody's wishes, and the family overrides it, what are you going to do? Go to court? So the more you can influence your family to see your wishes through is the best thing that we can encourage. So we will, in this in our policy chapter, have some guidelines or a position statement or a policy statement for nurses that will be the compass for the profession. But we also are very mindful that there's a few steps along the way where we should be making sure that every nurse understands their influence, whether you're talking at a barbecue or you're talking to residents or patients around these discussions. And there's 350,000 registered and enrolled nurses in the country. So if everybody understands their role, we've got an army.
You mentioned you'd just come back from Geneva. Was that a nursing event?
Yeah, it was actually a nursing and health event. The first week that I was there was to attend what is called triad meetings at the International Council of Nursing. And the Australian College of Nursing is the member of the International Council of Nurses. And we have a collaborative arrangement with the Australian Nursing and Midwifery Federation. So we went over there to hold meetings on the talking about the global perspectives of health and nursing and diseases and trends, and you know, it's always humbling to look up. You know, we get busy here, our heads down, there's a million issues to go through. You get on there was 80 countries represented from the 6 World Health Organization regions, and it's always nice to come home thinking, you know what, I don't know that I'd be anywhere else. Yes. We've got a great health system, you know, fantastic clinicians, good education, and whilst we are always a political topic, so that we're always going to be in the headlines and used as a bit of a tool for politicians' elections and things. Really, you know, not all the good stories come to the forefront of how much everybody does to serve the country. So that was the first week to talk about nursing priorities and the Nursing Now campaign and what nursing can do, particularly with those non-communicable diseases and climate change and other things. And then the second week I stayed to go to the World Health Assembly and was there for able to spend a day with them, listening to and participating in the World Health Assembly.
Brilliant.
And, yeah, look, it's a privilege in our in your career and in these jobs that we get that opportunity. And so we put forward 11 nursing interventions regarding some of the challenges internationally, things like from climate change to to antimicrobial resistance to a whole range of women and infants' health. And because there is major disparity in the training. I think doctors will be the same. And for us, not every nurse looks the same in every country. So our registration isn't a passport globally. And so the standards of care and the level of care do differ, really looking at how we could influence that from a nursing perspective.
Do you look at the Ebola crisis and just shiver?
Yeah. Honestly, the diseases that have emerged, the diseases that have returned, it's a little scary in that sense of, you know, we're very strong advocates for immunisation. We train nurses in immunisation. And we really promote and push through the college the importance of vaccination and immunisation. And here I don't think people realise necessarily the implications, but when you're in third world countries and they cannot get vaccines and they don't have immunisation, and what that actually means for population health and planning,
absolutely,
is a huge concern.
I mean, you only have to look at PNG, for example, and the tuberculosis thing going on up there.
I was in Fiji a few months ago giving a speech and sharing some resources. And meningococcus has broken out.
Yeah.
And so they've got a whole public health strategy around that. But, you know, it's just containment is their issue. And you think, wow, you know, it feels like I'm going back a decade or two in my own career. And we would have one or two cases and you'd be on alert, let alone the spread and looking at what's happening over there.
Absolutely. Yeah, there was a big study came out just this week on a global study, 193 nations and territories, on quality of access to healthcare. Like you said, we're all head down, bum up here, thinking, oh, we've got to fix this and we've got to fix that. And, you know, we're fifth in the world.
Oh, yeah.
Fifth in the world.
And in some categories, we're second and third.
Yeah, absolutely.
I always remind people, we have a great health system. And I am a nurse, my mum is a retired nurse, my sister's a podiatrist. You know, many of us who work here now, all my friends are doctors and nurses and physios. So, you know, we tend to congregate with our people.
Yes.
So I'm never comfortable just putting the system down for the sake of it because, you know, as you and I are speaking this morning, there's thousands and thousands of interactions happening all around the country that are just wonderful, and memories are being made, and care, people are being attended to and feeling comforted by health professionals and clinicians. And so there's always things that go wrong in any human system, but for the most part, people are doing a fantastic job. It is in ourselves, you know, to be really good at what we do. We don't want to be transactional. We don't want to lose the feeling. You don't want to get so resilient that you forget. And somebody did say to me, you know, what are we looking for in the qualities of a nurse? And I said, well, you know, a nurse is of the future. And I said, we do want all the compassion and the softness and the gentleness and that ability to care. But to be able to survive in this system, it's not for the faint-hearted. So you do need to be resilient and tough and be able to stand and fight for what you believe in. And so it's all of those qualities that make a really good nurse. If you have too much of one or too much of the other, it's out of balance.
But that's what you guys seem to have gotten a really good grip on is, you know, the other thing that amazes me about nurses is one minute you're having, you know, really complicated conversations with families and doctors and about the minutiae of caring for a patient, and the next minute you're cleaning shit up off the bathroom.
Yeah, that's right.
And I just think, wow.
If you don't have a strong stomach, you potentially talk about anything.
But that range of skills, I mean, you know, that range of the scope of your job is something that's unique in medicine, I think.
Yes, definitely. And you just take it in your stride because it's worse for the person you're caring for. I think we all know that it's more embarrassing. None of us want to be sitting naked being washed or turned or toileted. So all of those things that you might not need master's degrees for are actually the most important things. And nurses are very, very aware of how important that level of essential care is and the vulnerability and the humility. And so that's why, you know, we'll have a joke or have a laugh because you're making memories and we don't want anyone to feel embarrassed.
Thank you, Kylie. This has been great.
Our pleasure, Kate. Have a wonderful day.
My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.